topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Draw me close to you. Never let me go. And lay it all down again. To hear you say that I'm a friend.
Good day. The Almighty Creator desires a deep personal relationship with you. My name is James Robertson. I'm a researcher, publisher, and teacher regarding the matters and truths of the Almighty Creator, whose true name is Yah, the Eternally Self-Existing. I've been actively serving him since 1993, over 31 years. If you're not actively serving Yah, then by default you're serving Satan. My objective is to show you how you can make a big difference on earth and qualify for a position of high esteem in heaven for eternity. It's important to understand that as a believer, just being good is not the point. It's relationship with Yah that counts. Without this, you will be in a very unpleasant place in heaven with no way out. My aim is to show you how to get close to Father. If you're a good person without a clear relationship with Yah, then you're in a spiritual no man's land and will not enter heaven when you die. The Creator has said regarding unbelievers, "Why would I want someone to spend eternity with me when they do not believe I exist?" Yah is calling everybody on the planet to be involved and serve him and help him to have victory over Satan. My goal is to show you how to do this. Fundamentally, we each need to learn to see things on earth from Yah's perspective. My aim is to teach you how to do that. Please visit my website at www.endtimeissueministries.org. That's endtimeissueministries, one word, .org. Or email me on James, J-A-M-E-S, at endtimeissueministries.org. Today we're going to continue with the subject, Where Will You Spend Eternity? And we're going to deal with part 12 of that. The overview, we're looking at what is required in order to qualify to sit on a high throne for eternity. We'll continue to look at the famous reformer amongst the foolish virgins. We'll then look at the pure truth spoken in pure love and discuss how to get there and discover that pain is good. We'll then discover that relationships are forgiving and that we should learn on earth. We will then sum up regarding the foolish virgins. And we'll then continue our journey towards the judgment seat and the throne. Finally, we will look at the state of your relationship with the Almighty Creator. This broadcast is based on the article 2024-0103, Where Will You Spend Eternity? With commentary on the Final Quest, 3rd edition, part 11, originally written in 2003. We're continuing to look at the famous reformer amongst the foolish virgins. On page 95, paragraph 4, another man joins the conversation. Joyner describes this man as one who Joyner had considered as one of the greatest Christian leaders of all time. The section continues. The need to apply what one teaches in one's own life on a daily basis is an enormous point and enormous challenge. It's relatively easy to read a text and obtain revelation, or to obtain revelation in prayer. To apply it? On page 102, chapter, paragraph 1, it is stated that the high calling is not out of reach for anyone that the Almighty has called. It's also stated that love for the Almighty alone and seeking His glory alone is what will keep one on the path of life. My understanding is that everybody on earth has a high calling. My understanding is that it is entirely possible for you, not the person behind you, in front of you, left of you, right of you, above you, below you, whatever, you, to achieve a position of a high throne for eternity. The rules have changed. The previous dispensations didn't work. This is your opportunity to earn a high throne. It's further stated on page 102, para 1, that everything you do to exalt yourself will one day bring you the most terrible humiliation, while everything that one does out of true love for the Almighty to glorify His name will extend the limits of His eternal kingdom and ultimately result in a much higher place for yourself. Live for what is recorded here. Care nothing for what is recorded on earth. On page 103, paragraph 4, in a conversation with the wife of the famous reformer, it is stated that all of the relationships that you have on earth are continued here, and they're all purified by the judgment and by the fact that they are now spiritual, just as we are now spirit. This is a really important point. At one level, it seems obvious. At another level, I wonder how many of us really think about this in our relationship with others. So, it's not about exalting yourself. It's about drawing people to Father, to the Almighty, to Yah, the eternally self-existing. It's about bringing Him glory. It's about doing things that are pleasing to Him. Father, help me to bring You joy. I pray every night. Do you think about bringing Him joy? Has it crossed your mind that you could bring Him joy? And has it crossed your mind that perhaps you should bring Him joy? Firstly, what would it be like for a husband and wife if one is on a high throne and the other is in the outer darkness, particularly when the dross of this world has been burned off by the judgment and they then discover that they deeply love one another? This seems really critical in the context of the indication that so few people will currently make it into heaven if judged today. What would it be like for a husband and wife if one is in heaven and one is an ancestor spirit on earth? What about other relationships? What if a man has committed adultery with another man's wife and fallen deeply in love with her and come to repentance while she has continued in her sin? He will then still experience his deep love for her, even if she is roaming the earth as a demon and he is in heaven, or vice versa. The Almighty has indicated to me that this is so. Folks, this is... I'm not sure that you really get this point. Sorry to say that. It's a difficult point to get. That it is possible for two people. There's a passage in the New Testament which says that two will be at prayer and one will be taken and one not. That two will be in the field, one will be taken and one not. It's a state of mind, folks. It's an attitude to Yah. It is possible for two people to stand in a worship service and one to be worshiping Yah and another just to be singing a song. Some time ago, I came across a very powerful song, UK Blessing. And Father said to me, of those singing the song, only 20% believed in Him. Shocking stuff. What about family members and friends we could have interceded for more effectively, witnessed to more constructively? Consider Luke 16. Verses 22 to 26. And it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by the messengers into Abram's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And in hell he lifted up his eyes, being in torments, and seeth Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivest thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. Now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. And beside all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from hence, thence. It's sobering stuff, folks. If you are in relationship with somebody who is a believer and they're astray, they're sinning, they're going to end up in hell for a season. Are you going to get to heaven perhaps and then be confronted with the fact that maybe you didn't speak loudly enough or intensely enough? Notice that those in hell can speak to those in heaven and ask for help, and those in heaven can reply but cannot help. Notice that both Lazarus and the rich man were believers. What is it going to be like to be in the one place and see others one knew, liked, loved in the other place? Whichever way round it works out for you. What do you choose to do about this? An interesting aside is, notice that the rich man still had the idea that Lazarus should serve him. So he still had a way to go before that pride and judgment was burned out of him. I think that if one really deeply grasped what I'm talking about, one would noticeably change the way you deal with those you're in relationship with, those you're in contact with. I find myself, as I'm teaching this, realizing that I too am not making as much effort as I could to communicate these truths to other people. And that's sobering. It's not that easy, because there's this thing that you share things and people reject it, and they reject you and they mock you, or they don't understand you and it affects your relationship with them, so you don't do it because you're scared it might happen. What I'm getting out of this is that's not the right attitude. Then the pure truth spoken in pure love. On page 104, paragraph 3, it is stated that the pure truth spoken in pure love will always attract. It seems to me that this is a very important principle in how one shares these truths with others, particularly when one is concerned that another is in sin and one hopes to bring them to repentance. It seems to me that pure truth spoken in pure love has an order of magnitude greater probability of being received. Folks, the thought that comes to me is, that's easy to say. It's not easy to do. First of all, how do you come to a place where you have pure truth? I suggest that the prayer that I've shared previously, Father, judge me severely and correct me harshly, that I may serve you more perfectly, is going to help you to come to a place of pure truth. But how do you do that in pure love? How do you do it in love? Do you know what love is? We've spoken previously about 1 Corinthians 13, where it culminates in saying that love never dies. Love is enduring. Love is eternal. But that is chesed, covenant love. Here we're talking about, what are we talking about? Love, chesed. What if we're talking about an acquaintance, business associate, somebody we don't necessarily know very well. How do you speak the pure truth to such a person and do it in pure love? Comes back to the arrows from the mountain that we spoke about a month or two ago. It's arrows being the words. How do you find the correct words and deliver them in such a way that they have an impact? Then we look at how to get there, how to deal with one's own hurts, pain, drivenness, fear of rejection, memories of past arguments or encounters. It's a great challenge. Part of the challenge of seeking to be transformed, to become like Yeshua, is the pattern or the way or the example that we've been given. In this age, I found it really important to come to terms with just how far I am from being like Yeshua, and therefore just how difficult that makes it for me to communicate with others in a way they can receive. At the time of first writing, I stated, in recent years, I've done much work in dealing with childhood hurts and beliefs using psychological tools and practices, including those taught by the More to Life program. I found that the depth of these childhood hurts and beliefs about myself and others have had a massive impact on my ability to communicate effectively with others. See the website moretolife.org. That's www.moretolife.org. The key thing to reiterate is to seek to become like Yeshua. Early on in this journey of mine, 31 years ago, Father said to me, read the Gospels, the good news, as though you are Yeshua. That was eye-opening stuff, and I commend it to you. See yourself performing the miracles. See yourself with Yah speaking through you. I've learned that I've been sending out all sorts of unconscious messages about myself and about others that have seriously detrimented my ability to communicate effectively with them. I've come to understand that these hurts and beliefs in some form or another are present in every human being on earth today, and that they contribute in large measure to the extent to which so many relationships, including marriages, are dysfunctional. The final quest goes on the heading, pain is good. Also on 104, paragraph 3, it is stated, also by the wife of the reformer, pain is good. It shows you where there's a problem. Do not try to reduce the pain until you find the problem. Yah's truths often brings pain as it highlights a problem that we have. But his truth will always show us the way to freedom too. When you know this, you will even begin to rejoice in your trials, which are all allowed to keep you on the path of life. So, pain is good. As I've shared, I prayed, first found the prayer in the final quest, judge me severely, correct me harshly, that I may serve you more perfectly, or words to that effect. And I prayed it for the first time back in 1998 when I first read the book. Subsequently, I prayed it occasionally until around 2010 when I became really aware of its importance. And since then, I've prayed it most days, intermittently, admittedly, not every day for the last 14 years, but currently I pray it every night. And I recommend it. And sometimes there is real pain. Split a tooth on one occasion after I'd sinned. Relationships are forgiving. In 105.5, the wife of the famous reformer states, as your mind is renewed by the Spirit of Truth, you will not see relationships as an opportunity to get from others, but to give. Giving provides the greatest fulfillment that we can ever know. Most wonderful human relationships are but a fleeting glimpse of the ecstasy that comes when we give ourselves to Yah in pure worship. She continues, true love never seeks to be first or to be in control. Excuse me. But rather the place of service. If my husband, she's referring to the great reformer, and I had kept this in our marriage, we would be sitting next to the king now, and this great hall would be filled with many more souls. Giving. Do you give into your relationships, or do you look at them as an opportunity to take, to demand, to want? True love never seeks to be first or in control. Is your marriage a bit rocky? Could it be that you're trying to be in control, that you're trying to be first? Think about it. The pages prior to this statement contain some shocking information about how a dysfunctional marriage in the life of someone with a high calling detrimentally impacted the lives of every generation thereafter, and detrimentally impacted their own eternal destiny. Father has confirmed to me that the great reformer referred to above is Martin Luther. There are a number of big lessons here for every believer, not least with regard to marriage. The book then goes on to the heading Learn on Earth. In 106.6, another person states that everything that Joyner was learning in the vision had been given to him on earth. I understand this to apply to every one of us. He is told that, quote, every relationship, every encounter with another person could teach you what you are learning here if you will keep that cloak of humility on and learn to always keep your attention fixed on his glory. A key message from the final quest is the power of humility. And as I think I said a week or two ago, it is not easy to be humble. Humility is not something that our society encourages, that we even really understand. Father, humble me by your Spirit, that I may learn to serve you more effectively, would be a useful prayer. I've added to the prayer from Ephesians 6, the full armor of Yah, the mantle of humility. It's so important. I urge you to read the final quest to really see how that fits together. The speaker turns out to be a man who had, quote, a great ministry. This man reports that he became very proud near the end of his life and started to touch the Almighty's anointed and to do his prophet's harm, that he and his followers looked for faults in other ministries and exposed them. In 108.2, this man states that he became, quote, the worst thing that a man can become on the earth, a stumbling block who produced other stumbling blocks. We sowed fear and division throughout the church, all in the name of protecting the truth. In my self-righteousness, I was headed for perdition. In his great mercy, the Almighty allowed me to be struck by a disease that would bring about a slow and humiliating death. Just before I died, I came to my senses and repented. There's a huge point here, folks. If a believer is in right standing with Yah, they will remain strong and vibrant to the moment they are taken. If a believer is in sin and error, they may well find themselves sick, feeble, battling. It's judgment. If a believer dies prematurely, It's judgment. They're taken before they cross to perdition. Folks, this is really serious stuff. If you're a believer towards the end of your life and you're sick, you need to get on your knees and find out why and repent and turn it around before you lose everything. So we see that there's an opportunity to change sides right up to the last minute. If you're near the end of your life and experiencing severe illness, it may be really important to check out what the Almighty may be wanting you to learn before it's too late. If you do not, you may find yourself rejected and cast out, in which case you will first visit hell to pay the price of your unconfessed sin as a believer, and then be cast into the lake of fire and brimstone to be utterly consumed. The worst of both worlds. Page 109, paragraph 3, this man states, "And we always comfort ourselves by actually thinking that we were doing Yah a favor when we attacked his own children." He goes on to refer to the worst judgment of all, the judgment of the stumbling blocks. He also states that those who are doing these things are doing the work of the accuser, Satan. A few days ago, maybe a week ago, I encountered on this Facebook group that I'm a member of, somebody was really declaring judgment on a certain individual. And I quoted two or three verses from the Bible, "Judge not, lest thou also are judged. Who are you to judge another man's servant?" and so forth. And the person doing it just kicked back and condemned me and asked me, you know, what I was doing. And I said, well, they didn't believe. I pointed out that I was quoting the Bible, and they said, well, you know, where's the Bible verses? So they obviously didn't know the Bible very well. But it's huge. It's commonplace. Don't judge others, period. On 108.6 and 109.1, it is indicated that simply allowing people to talk about the errors of another congregation or asking people to pray for a congregation that is considered to be in error and similar actions are all part of the sin of being a stumbling block. I understand this to relate to judging others and then encouraging others to judge them as well by speaking about their perceived or actual sin to others. The truth is, we're not competent to judge, and frequently when we do judge, we're judging based on our own pride, error, self-righteousness, etc. It's better to notice, move on, and pray in one's heart that the will of the Almighty will be done in a particular situation. Don't discuss it. Certainly do not tell others about it or issue emails to large numbers of people or publish articles or get on Facebook, etc., condemning others. No matter how politely or nicely or gently or lovingly or whatever one thinks one is doing. By all means, go to somebody privately and say, "John or Jane or whoever, I'm concerned with what you did there, what you said there. Please pray about it. I think you might be in error." By all means, point error out to people, but once they accept or reject, move on. I had a situation in the last couple of weeks where somebody started sending me quite anointed messages on WhatsApp. They're in the name of God and Jesus and the Lord and the cross and Easter. And so I wrote to the woman and said, you know, you need to correct. And she came back and said, "You're judging me." And so I just walked away. Plant the seeds and that's it. Still in the place of the foolish virgins, Jonah meets a famous writer who confesses that while his writings are widely esteemed in the church, they are shallow and filled more with worldly wisdom than divine truth. This man goes on to state that he had failed the King of Kings and that he'd used his gifts to draw men more to myself and my wisdom than to the Almighty, that he hardly knew the Holy Spirit, that he did not point men to the Almighty, but to himself and others like him. He states that his mind was his idol. In 113.3, this same man states that he buried his talents beneath his own spiritual pride and ambition. Folks, this is a criticism that can be levied with respect against the vast majority of people in leadership. It doesn't matter whether you're in Islam, in the mosque, in Judaism, in the synagogue or the school, I forget the name of the school, or in Christianity, in the church, or the Bible school, or whatever. People are relying on human wisdom and learning human standards and human erroneous interpretation. Yah wants a deep personal relationship with you. He doesn't want you to have a relationship with the Bible or the Quran or the Torah or whatever. He wants you to have a relationship with him. So this man states further, the more authority you're given, the more potential for both good and evil you will have. Those who will rule with him for the ages will know responsibility of the most profound kind. No man stands alone, and every human failure or victory resonates far beyond our comprehension, even to generations to come. On 113.5, this man states, and I sought Yah instead of knowledge about him. Many thousands who I could have led successfully would have resulted in many more millions being here now. He goes on to say, never seek influence for yourself, but only seek the Almighty, and be willing to take his yoke. My influence did not feed your heart, but rather your pride in knowledge. 113.3, he concludes by saying, study to show yourself approved unto Yah. One man takes a wrong journey, a wrong turning, and where he could have made a huge difference, instead leads people into error and deception and pride, and keeps people out of heaven. Each one of us has that opportunity to lead others to Yah, to Yeshua, to heaven, or lead them to their pride, their carnality, their Bible. I constantly see this as an enormous challenge. It's so easy to want to be approved by other human beings and lose sight of the approval of the Almighty. This is particularly so as a consequence of the fallen state of the world. That which is esteemed by the Almighty is generally ridiculed or rejected by mankind in this age. It requires real commitment to seek to please the Almighty. Folks, I come out of a Christian background, although I no longer regard myself as Christian. I see myself as bridging between Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and other religions. But from my personal experience of Christianity, as it is practiced in the world today, there is massive deception, massive error, and the vast majority of Christian leaders are leading people away from Yah. Even those that are sort of leading people towards him are doing so in great error. I've spoken at length in the past and previous broadcasts about not worshipping the Bible, worship Yah. Don't worship Jesus, worship Yah. I've pointed out that Yah says the Bible is the greatest idol on the world earth today. You've got a choice. Spend an hour reading the Bible as a source of knowledge, or read the Bible as an insight of people who served Yah, will spend that hour worshiping and drawing close to Yah. The Bible has a place. It's useful information, but it's over 2,000 years old and it doesn't deal with the present dispensation. So summing up, The Foolish Virgins, page 114, paragraph 4. Jonah reports, in this first multitude I saw many other men and women of Yah from both my own time and history. I stopped and talked to many more. I was continually shocked that so many whom I expected to be in the highest positions were in the lowest rank of the kingdom. Many shared the same basic story. They'd all fallen to the deadly sin of pride after their great victories, or fallen to jealousy when other men were anointed as much as they were. Others had fallen to lust, discouragement, or bitterness near the end of their lives and had to be taken before they crossed the line into perdition. They all gave me the same warning. The higher the spiritual authority that you walk in, the further you can fall if you are without love and humility. I've read these passages, I don't know, 20, 30 times, maybe more. It's sobering stuff, folks. Get the book, read it. There's a copy on the website with commentary up to part 2 of chapter 5. I've corrected Jesus and God and the Lord to the correct terminology so that it's maybe not an accurate reflection of what Joyner wrote, although that's still there. But it's highlighting the extent to which we need to correct. The book continues towards the judgment seat and the throne. Joyner reports in 114.5 and 115.1, as I continued towards the judgment seat, I began to pass those who were of high rank in the kingdom. After many more veils had been stripped away from me by meetings with those who'd stumbled over the same problems that I had, I began to meet some who had overcome. I met couples who had served Yah and each other faithfully to the end. Their glory was unspeakable, and their victory encouraged me that it was possible to stay on the path of life and to serve Him in faithfulness. Those who stumbled, stumbled in many different ways. Those who prevailed all did it the same way. They did not deviate from their devotion to the first and greatest commandment, loving the Almighty. By this their service was done unto Him, not to men, not even for spiritual men. So it's a continuation of the point that I've been making. Don't worship men or women. Don't worship institutions. Don't worship books. Worship Yah. If you are in a place where you think somebody who does something to your book, be it the Quran, be it the Bible, be it the Torah, is committing some grievous sin, you're mistaken. If somebody is speaking ill of Father, that is grievous sin. And I ask you to make that distinction. Books are just books. Men and women are just men and women. They're not there to be worshipped, and if you worship them, if you kill another person because they did something to your book or said something about your book, you're in deep trouble. And 115.2, quote, when I was still not even halfway to the throne, what had been the indescribable glory of the first ranks now seemed to be the outer darkness in comparison to the glory of those I was now passing. The greatest beauty on earth would not qualify to be found anywhere in heaven, and I was told that this room was just the threshold of realms indescribable. Truly, this is a treasure that is worth seeking to obtain, a treasure that warrants a sacrifice of obedience and love in this life. So ponder this. He says the beauty is indescribable. He said that the beauty that he described earlier as being dramatic of the those who were in the foolish virgins now appeared to be so dull because he was getting closer to the throne. Heaven truly is a magnificent place. Why would you want to spend eternity on earth as a demon or in the outer darkness? Why would you even want to spend eternity as a foolish virgin when you could become an overcomer, impact the world, and sit on a high throne with Yeshua for eternity? I know what I'm going for, and I urge you to do the same. This is the end of this section. We'll carry on with this next week. I've got a few things I want to share with you before I sign off. So I want to take a step back and ask you, what is the state of your relationship with the Almighty Creator? I'd like to ask you to critically examine where you are relative to Him. Do you talk to Him constantly throughout the day and allow Him to lead you in every possible way? Are you conscious of Him at all times? Do you worship Him at every opportunity? Do you count Him your friend? Have you clearly and unambiguously heard Him call you friend? If not, you're failing in your life purpose, and you will be bitterly disappointed when you die. Folks, fundamentally, the only reason that you exist is to be a friend of the Almighty Creator. It's why He created the universe, the solar system, planet Earth, the plants, the animals, human beings, to have intelligent companions to talk to. Doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, thin or fat, tall or short, African, Asian, Caucasian, European, whatever, even if you're a Satanist or a witch or a warlock, He wants you to be His friend. Doesn't matter whether you are Jewish or Muslim or Christian or whatever. And if you're one of the above and you're fighting with others of another group, you're in serious error. We are all called to be servants of Yah. It doesn't matter what label you put on yourself, and you really need to walk away from those labels. In closing, thank you for listening. Please send me your questions to james@endtimeissueministries.org. That's james@endtimeissueministries.org. Please email me to join the mailing list, also at james@endtimeissueministries.org. If you decide to draw close to the Almighty, please let me know, and I can connect with you by Skype, Zoom, Teams, email, or telephone so that I can help you with your journey. I hope to connect with you again next week, when I will continue to explore how to become a friend of the Creator. Work with me to make a way for Yeshua to return in victory at the end of the millennium and make His enemies His footstool. If you have never believed in Yah, you can do it right now. Pray something along the lines of, Father Yah, I come to you in the name of Yeshua. I've never believed that you existed, but I believe you exist now. I ask you to forgive my unbelief. I ask you to take me by the hand and lead me. Come and live in me. Help me to be your servant. Help me to overcome to the end. Help me to be your friend. Show me what to do. Open the doors in my life that you want open. Close the doors you want closed. Bring the people you want into my life. Take the people you don't want in my life out. And just pray as you feel led. It's simple. Make a quality decision to believe that Yah exists and a quality decision that you want to become his friend. And if you're already a believer, then just take the second part of what I've just prayed. Father, yeah, I want to become your friend, just as simple as that. And then walk it out. So for those of you who've been along for a while, I'm going to say good night. For those of you who are new on the program, I've got a bit more information to share with you. So to those who are leaving, good night. In closing, who am I? James Robertson. I have a doctorate in engineering and I'm a retired military commander. I now work as a management consultant. I have over 31 years' experience of actively seeking to draw close to the Almighty following a dramatic encounter with him on the 12th of March 1993 when he spoke to me audibly in a locked room and I knew for certain that he was real. In learning about Father, I applied my deep-seated aversion to failure born out of an accident in early childhood, coupled to my engineering and military training of rigor and preventing failure, to my seeking of knowledge about Father. This journey led to numerous supernatural experiences, prayers answered, and clear communication with the Creator that forms the basis for what I teach in these programs. See the video, Why Seek Relationship, for an overview of what I believe at the top of the website. Please visit my website at www.endtimeissueministries.org. That's endtimeissueministries, one word, .org. The ETI version of the Bible with correction of key translation errors is on the ETI Bible version page. The entire Bible is there with first order corrections of major errors. The name of Yah appears over 10,000 times. Recordings of nearly all of the teachings broadcast so far on Google search on Google for Relationship with Creator Radio. And also the transcripts on the Transcripts of Broadcast page. Books with teachings from 1998 to May 2019 on the Books for Printing page. I publish regular email articles. Email me on james@endtimeministries.org to be added to the list or to seek counsel or prayer or give me feedback. Visit the website and use the Google search, article keyword cloud, table of contents, and article search to locate the information you're looking for. Good night.
Father, I come to you, lifting up my hands. By your grace I stand.
Hi, I'm James Robertson. I want to ask you, where will you spend eternity? And I want to ask you if you know what is required in order to qualify to sit on a high throne for eternity. Note that heaven is clearly a desirable place to spend eternity. If you're not actively seeking a high throne for eternity, you are missing the point of your existence. Please listen to my broadcast on w4cy.com radio or talk4tv.com. Visit my website at www.endtimeissueministries.org or email me on james@endtimeissueministries.org to find out more. I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks so much. Bye.